Hello and welcome to the Ross and Josh Show here on Radio Yorkshire. That's it. Good night. Thanks for coming along and join us next week for more of the same. Now, of course, we're here with you for the next 3,060... No, how many minutes? Hang on. No, 180 minutes, not 3,000 minutes. That would be a terrible, terrible travesty for all concerned. My name is Ross Briley. I am the eponymous Ross in the Ross and Josh Show. Joining me is the man they sometimes call Josh, or at least for the purposes of this show, we're going to call him Josh, because otherwise the title would be inconsequential.
I am thinking about changing my name by deed poll, but, you know, for the time being, I have to keep it as that because of the show.
What
it's
name?
It is only the show that is keeping me with this current name.
Because you don't look like a Josh.
Do I not?
No.
What do I look like?
You look like a ginger nut that someone's dropped down the back of the sofa.
But what would you call that ginger nut that's been dropped down the back of the sofa? Barry?
Clarence.
Or? Clarence?
Yeah, but the Ross and Clarence
I look like a Clarence.
You look like a Clarence.
Met a Clarence?
A Clarence sounds like a euphemism now you've said it.
Oh, well, you look like a right old
you
Clarence.
You look like a right Clarence, you do, mate.
Well, I mean, I find it difficult to believe that you've ever met a Clarence.
Oh, I've met a Clarence, all right.
No, you haven't.
I've seen some Clarences in my time.
Again, that sounds like a euphemism for something.
Yeah,
I've seen some right old Clarences in my time.
Mate, I've seen them. They go left, right, round the corner, I don't know.
All round the Clarences.
I've been to loads of
Clarence sales in my time.
Yeah, I mean to Clarence ass.
Yeah. Well, that's good for you, and I'm glad to hear it. But so I look like a Clarence.
You look like a Clarence.
Right, what would my second name be? Do you think I look like a saddler?
No.
I don't think I look like a man who puts pieces of leather on the back of horses.
I think you look like a Beaufort Tetley.
What's
I think that? Your name should be Clarence Beaufort Tetley.
I really think you're giving me a degree of class that I don't have here with that name.
That is true.
I'm willing to take it. I'd love to get out of the squalor. So, you know, if that's
Josh Sadler, Straight Out of Squalor. That's your that's your first album.
My forthcoming EP, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's The Calm Before the Storm, which is the name of the album, and then I'll have something else out after that.
I'd imagine so.
You're listening to The Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
But yeah, it is the Ross and Josh Show, and on this week's Nonsense Cast. That's what it should be called. Never mind a podcast. It should be called Nonsense Cast. We'll be talking about how to be an adult, or at least
attempting.
We should have been taught on how to be an adult. Because I do get the feeling that it's quite... I mean, I'm 30 years old now, and I'm feeling it. I'll be honest with you.
But do you ever feel like you're a charlatan? That one day someone's going to find
like
out...
I feel like I'm Tim Burgess, the lead singer of the Charlatans, yeah.
Well, good for you. How is the band?
Terrible.
I agree. But do you know what I mean? Do you ever feel like you're pretending at being an adult? Like someone's going to find you out any moment?
Well, I think this is the thing. Because no one's actually taught anything in preparation for being an adult, I have no idea if I'm succeeding or I'm actually carrying out things in a correct way, because I don't know what is expected of me. It's that thing of whereby people go, well, you're doing all right. You've got all your things and you're still here and you've got some of them notes in your pocket and you've got a roof over your head and, you know, you've got your
You're not falling apart at the core and you're still here, therefore you're viewed to be an adult. I'm just scared, though, that one day a child smaller than myself, which is rare, will come up to me
Poppycock,
and say...
Poppycock, there are none.
Will say, excuse me, mister, you have got no idea what you're doing, have you? And he'll be right.
And he'll be your boss.
And he will be my boss.
go, no, I haven't. You're fired. You're only 8. I know. And I'm better at this than you are. That's what'll happen. He's also a tiny...
It's the future, Ross.
It is the future. It's what we can expect from the rest of our lives. No, I agree. I do tend to think that the vast majority of the people are thrashing around hoping for the best. And that's why I think the most successful people are the people who are just generally ignorant of these kind of things.
What, they don't think about it? You mean they just do it?
I think they just don't care. They're probably too self-centered. The most successful people in life are generally quite self-centered.
That depends very heavily on your definition of success. Do you mean the kind of the most people who've got furthest in their particular field?
Yeah. Okay. Obviously if we're going to say having a loving family
well,
and
you
fulfilled.
Know, you can't rule that out as a form of success.
No, I'm not saying, but I mean the external version of success.
Yeah, okay.
It's very hard to measure that level of success.
Yeah,
because you know some people are happy with what they've got, and other people are greedy, greedy monkeys. So that's what we're talking about today on the show. But I do think mainly because, as I said, you're not taught. You go to school, you learn things.
I'm very taught.
You are very taught, Dad. You learn things that are essentially useless for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Unless you go into a very specific field, which is one just outside Hertfordshire, where you get to do calculus.
Well, but yeah, you know, geometry comes in handy there in terms of like dividing the field up and you know, knowing exactly how many potatoes you can get into your triangle.
Yeah.
And it is a triangle.
It is a triangle, yeah.
But other than that field, useless.
Useless,
that.
Absolutely useless. So it'll be, what alternate lessons for preparing you for adulthood. I think that's a key thing. And more awkward social situations. I think that should be something we could probably talk about.
I think it's probably an ongoing thing. I don't think it would be difficult for me to get into a socially awkward situation every week.
Yeah. You could find trouble in a Buddhist monastery, I think.
Well, you know.
I'm sorry, I couldn't find...
I would be the trouble, that's the thing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Wherever you go, you always take the weather with you.
I couldn't find the toilet, lad, so I've just defecated on the stairs. Get out. That's it.
That's how they talk, you know.
Well, they might do.
They might do, yeah.
Who are you to say what the Buddhists talk like?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But that's what they're saying.
All right, then.
Well, then.
Solved it.
I will, then.
Good.
The Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
Joining us in the studio is a man who looks thrilled to be here. It's Mr. Ken Pitterson, who has joined us in the studio. And he's here to talk about York races, essentially, Ken. First off, let's have a quick introduction. Your name is Ken Pitterson. You are a horse racing... Again, it's quite difficult now to introduce you to people because I've known you for so long and I just go, it's Ken.
Yes.
It's Ken.
I know. My central job is that I assess horses in the paddock to see how they're going to perform on the day and probably go on to the future what they can do. So it's basically I have a look at horses, see how they look. Are they look well in themselves? Are they going to perform up to their best today? Or do I see them as like 2-year-olds or 3-year-olds? Long term down the line, will it be better horses, say 6 months' time down the line?
Now, I'm just going to just pause that for a second. How much of that made sense to you, Josh?
Absolutely none of it.
This is the joy. Because this is the thing about, again, I think we forget, obviously, both being involved in or being interested in horse racing for many years. You,
yep,
a lot longer than I have, Cam.
Took tell by the grey hairs, can't you?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know, I'll catch it up on you a little bit. And sometimes when I'm talking about racing with people and someone's there who's not into racing, eyes glaze over and you forget how much impenetrable language there actually is.
Yes, I know. The racing jargon, as it's known, was.
Yes.
So you've got to try and not dumb it down, but just try and explain it a little bit easier to people who are not involved in the sport.
Yeah, it's a bit. I suppose the equivalent is the cliche of going to a hi-fi shop or trying to buy some sort of technical gadgetry, and the guy going, you don't want that because this, that, and the other, blah, 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 and you're just going,
you've got no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, I just want a camera that takes pictures, and you're like, you don't want that camera, mate. Why not? It looks like a camera. So that's the kind of thing. It's like, I quite like the look of that horse, Ken. No, you don't want to back that. Why not? It's a horse. It's fine. It's got a nice name and a lovely...
How long have you been doing this, Ken?
Over 20 years, I think. Yeah, over 20 years.
I think the overriding question that I've got about this is how did you get into something like that? Because it seems like it's a very niche field of expertise, is it? Or
I wouldn't say it's a niche thing. I think...
It's pretty niche, Ken.
No, I personally think once you've got a template to know what you're looking at, what you're doing, it's all what takes your eye.
It is, but what I do get the feeling it is, and this is going to sound a bit pretentious, I suppose, but it's like art appreciation. It's all, everyone could go into an art gallery and say, I really like that, that's really nice, and they can get to know the techniques involved. Very few people can really know what they're talking about and essentially make a career out of it.
I see what you mean, but I did a piece in the Weekender. I saw it in the Racing Post about last year. And I had a person who knew nothing about racing, didn't know nothing about how to look at horses in the paddock. He spent a day with me. And I showed him the nuts and bolts of what do you look for in an unfit horse, a fit horse, how a horse looks well. And once he got the template of that, he could see what I was saying. And he learned just by being with me for that space of time. So if someone shows you, this is what a fit horse looks like, its ribs, its back end, its demeanour, is it sweating, is it getting upset, and you learn those sort of things, it's not as hard as it make out. I mean, the quality comes into it is that you kind of know how A trainer turns out his horse, B trainer turns out his horse, so you kind of know how their horses look, and then you kind of say, well, that's not a normal horse trained by John Gosden, or that's not a normal horse trained by Richard Fry.
But that's the thing, the nuance, the detail,
the slightly
is
nuts
the
and bolts of those are just are the things that make slightly difference. But just the basics, anyone can do it, Roscoe.
All right, I think this sounds like a challenge. I think we should go to the races.
You think this is something that, to see if I could actually do this?
Yeah, because you are about as novice as it comes.
Yeah, I would say so, because I know nothing about betting or life or horses.
General.
Yeah, so...
Can you just teach Josh about life, Kev?
But I mean, what I was saying is when I said, how did you get into this? Was this a thing that...
Well, just pause a second.
Yeah.
Ken's previous life was as a pastry chef, which would interest you a lot more.
It would, probably.
It was only by...
The pastry was just getting me down.
It was just slightly by accident because I was going racing with a few of my friends. Funny enough, I met one of my friends I went racing with at Windsor after about 20 years, which was quite alarming.
Oh, you hadn't seen for 20 years?
I haven't seen him for 16 years. And it was a bit of a shock seeing him. So brought back all those memories when we used to go racing together. And
I thought you were dead.
Doing. Yes, it was a bit like that when we saw each other. I got into it by being introduced to someone who had the previous job that I had. And he showed me the nuts and bolts of what to look for.
Did he put his arm around your shoulder?
No,
and
he
say,
didn't. He said, son.
All this will be yours one day.
Yeah, this will be yours. And I said, no chance. And he just showed me what you had to look for. And then because I stood next to him for all those years, his expertise rubbed off on me.
Yeah.
And then I learned from him. And then I asked a few people who I respected. And as I my motto is, if you don't know, ask someone.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you two things, either do one or they'll tell you. So and that's how it worked. I used to just ask people.
The vast majority of the time, it's do one, isn't it?
Well, it is to start with. And then you just become persistent and become a pest. And then I thought, well, okay, he wants to learn and I'll show him. And then they showed me a few things and you just kind of pick things up.
Mm.
And then you just mould it how you like to see it. Because a lot of people look, and I'm like, you can say, a lot of people can look, but they can't tell what they're actually looking at.
Yes, exactly.
But once someone shows you what you're looking at, you can see it.
If
I took you to the races and I showed you...
He won't get in.
Well, he might be underage.
We'll get
a chance
the height restriction, yeah.
No, 16's getting free.
There we go. Then that's sorted. We'll see if we can. I'll shave this off, and then we can. We'll see if we can get in for free.
Yeah. Don't. Or just shave your entire head. They'll let you. They'll just let you in out of
they'll
fear.
They'll let me in out of fear. Yeah.
They'll go, oh my god, a fetus, a terrifying walking fetus in a suit. Come in, sir. Smoking a roll up.
Yeah. You might get away with that one. No, you can't smoke indoors, Ross. So
no, that's true. No. You have to cut a hole in the fence.
You're listening to the Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
So, right. So, say you're going to the races.
Yeah.
You're there with your mates. You're thinking, I know, I'm going to impress them. I'll go up to the paddock. I'll say, come on, we'll go and pick a winner out. We'll go and pick a winner out from the paddock. What is the first thing you're looking for?
First thing
a horse, obviously.
Right, it happens. helps to look at a horse with four legs.
Yeah. It's always good.
Yeah. Or the first thing you want to do is just make sure your horse is nice and relaxed and just taking the whole day in its stride, because you don't want a horse that's A, doing too much prior to its racing, because it's using up excess energy. So you just want to walk in, your horse is walking around the paddock, he's not doing anything over excessively, so he's walking around, taking notes of what's going around, but not doing anything to overexcite itself.
Yeah, you should definitely bear that in mind, I think, in life.
I could use that as a piece of advice just in general, yeah, for before doing anything.
I think you expend the energy, all your energy in all the wrong places.
Yeah.
I think that's...
I wouldn't disagree with that.
No, really. That's fair enough. And you get quite cultish occasionally as well.
That is definitely a negative.
Yeah, that's something you should watch out for. If a horse is getting a tad overexcited in the paddock, shall we say, that's never a positive either.
No.
Mine not on the job, Ken.
No.
Mine not on the job.
No, definitely not. And you're using up energy you could be using in a race.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So you're looking for a horse who's nice and relaxed, nice and settled. How do you know a horse is fit and ready for the race?
It's a bit like looking at human beings. You want to see... If you're looking at...
Come on then, Ken. I'm going to stand up now. Look at me now. which part of me looks like
an
athlete?
The thing is, when you look at you, Roscoe, you're... Shall I say, your gut doesn't protrude outwards. It's not. See, it's quite. I would say it's flat.
Thanks very much, Ken. That's the nicest thing you've ever said.
When you look at a horse, you want to see not a horse that hasn't got, basically, its belly hanging down or wobbling, which means it isn't fit. So when you look at a horse, you want to see its ribs or hint of ribs. So you can see, you know what ribs look like.
You've seen them. I do, yeah.
We had Chinese last week. That's what I was thinking.
You look at that, and that you see a hint of ribs. So that indicates how fit it is. That's your first line of contact.
Right.
When you look at its rear end, and a horse, because as a horse gallops, it gets fitter by using its rear end to power itself up a gallop. So you look at its rear ends, and you'll see lines down its back. The more protruding the lines are down its back, the fitter it is. So if you don't, you're looking for
that muscle definition.
That muscle definition is very important.
Do you know what muscles are?
You don't need them. White wine.
No, not those ones.
Okay, so it's not got those on the back of the horse.
Definitely not those ones.
So my bullet points here are relaxed.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ribs.
Yeah.
Yep.
And lines down the back.
Yeah. Yep. Which indicate muscle definition, as Ross has said.
All right. Good. I'm with this so far. Yeah. I'm keeping track.
You feel like you can go to York and pick winners?
Not yet. I think there's probably a little bit more to it than this.
All right. What else? Other things that come up, a nice coat.
Yep.
And do you own a nice coat, Josh?
A nice coat?
Do you own a nice coat?
No.
No, you don't, though. No. Do you own any nice clothes?
Clothes?
No.
No, that is especially important to say, to express the well-being of a horse. You look at his coat and you want a uniform coat. So you want the horse from head to toe, coat looks really well, it's shining. Which hits you between the eyes, you'll see. And the healthier your coat is...
You said one today, Ken, I can't remember what it was, it said it looked like a seal.
I said, time test has got a skin like a seal.
Yes.
I mean, it absolutely shone. And if you look at a horse, that indicates how well a horse is. You look at its coat.
Does it do with how healthy it is? Yeah. Because of the...
That's right. You get a dull coat, it indicates the horse may not have been... is not at his best.
Well, again, this works for humans as well, doesn't it?
I'm thinking all of these things could be applied to... Yeah. You can look at a person and tell sort of how healthy...
Well, if someone's had too much to drink or done too much, you can tell in the way their face looks.
Yeah.
Looks slightly drawn, don't look great.
I think the bags under my eyes right now would suggest that I'm not necessarily primed and ready to go for the race.
No.
No. But the thing is, in real life, though, you can't normally ask a human to walk around in a circle while you admire their body.
The thing is, Ross, with that one, you can just ask them. You can't do that with a horse.
That's true, yeah. You feeling well? No, I'm not really fancying it today. No.
Again, like you said, you've got the option of they will do it for you or they'll ask you to do one. I think it's usually a do-one situation with that. But
I think in that capacity, yeah. Do you mind if... Can I just admire your back end, see if I can see any muscle definition?
If it's a woman, it's never worked for me. A problem there.
Yeah, I think that's if you want, it's likely to get you a slap in the face, and rightly so.
Yeah, probably.
I feel. But again, at least, although with a horse, if he took offence to it, it's more like to get your kick in the head, which is worse.
It could be fatal.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a way for you to go, Josh.
All right, well, that's another tip. I'll remember that.
Yeah. What else have you got? What else are we looking for?
Yeah, so you've got those sort of bullet points you look for to start with, right. And then you can look at how the horse goes onto the track. Because even though the horse may pass past all those points in the paddock, looks well in its coat, looks fit, nice and relaxed, goes on the track, and it could bolt down to go down to the start and lose its race before it even starts.
Yeah, again, much like humans, you can. Yep. Some humans, you look at them and you think, yeah, he looks like quite an athletic type, and then they run like a marionette.
That's it.
it's not particularly athletic.
No. So
looks can be deceiving, Ken.
Definitely. So you can take those little things, you take those to the races, you have a look, see what you like, and then you can marry up the form, which comes later. But if you look at those sort of bullet points, those will give you a slight head start than anybody else.
This is the Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
It's Ross, Josh and Ken Pitterson in the studio trying to teach us how to find winners with your eyes at York Races. If you're going to York Races, it's going to be a Saturday afternoon and it's going to be interesting, Ken.
It normally is, Ross.
It is, yeah.
Yes, racing is normally interesting, Ross.
It is, but York on a Saturday afternoon is sometimes more interesting than other times.
We have our moments, yes, definitely.
Yeah. How do you stay focused, Ken, in the face of so many distractions?
Well, first, don't look at the women. That's big distraction in my case.
Is that just a lesson for you in life again? Then,
all right, okay, I'll jot that one down.
Don't be distracted by the ladies.
Okay.
And admittedly, it's never been that much of a problem for you, has it?
I wouldn't say so, no. It's not one of my main concerns.
Oh, you've been distracted by them and they've gone, I'm sorry, have we met? What do you want?
I was just admiring the hindquarters. Looking for definition.
You've got lovely ribs.
Sounds good.
I'm not sure about that. But
no. Stay sober, Ken, as well, if you join back with us.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, in fact, we mentioned that in the press room today. You just don't want to be drinking and betting because that is a recipe for disaster.
It's amazing, isn't it? To be fair, it's a recipe for everything, whether it's presenting a radio show, whether it's especially stand-up comedy. You think, yeah, I'll have a couple of beers, I'll be a lot funnier. Turns out, you're actually worse at everything, yes. I find, when you've had a couple of beers. Who knew, Ken?
The only thing you're not worse at is being drunk, of course. So that's
true.
It does help with that. But I mean, you've
always been quite good at that.
What, getting drunk?
Being drunk. Yeah.
Being drunk. Yeah, it's a talent of mine. But yeah. Like a day out at the races, to me in my mind, it is one of the things traditionally where you would go and have a drink, or you'd see a lot of people would be drinking for it. You know, yeah. Or champagne and whatever else. But thinking about it, having lots of money to spend that could quite easily be lost, and getting drunk does not sound like a good combination.
It's not a great combo, no.
No.
And obviously, what a lot of people do is they go, yeah, they back a winner in the first, and they go, I've got loads of money. And then by the end of the day, he goes, I'm sure I had 200 quid in my pocket. But no, it's all gone on booze and fags and pies.
And hats.
Yeah. You need a good. Have you got a good?
Not with my head.
doesn't fit hats.
No.
Why not?
Too big.
Too big. Yeah. I get the same thing. Do you suit a good hat?
I've never worn a hat.
You've never worn a hat, have you?
The Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
Yeah, we were talking about on the show last week. We were talking about awkward social situations, and we're also trying to talk about. I think one of the things with awkward social situations is that. You're not really taught how to behave as a child either. And I think
it's
that's
not, yeah, it's not something you run through in a classroom environment, is it?
No, but this is the thing. I think where did you go to school, Ken?
I went to a school called William Gladstone, believe it or not.
Did you really?
Named after the foremost Prime Minister.
Well, named after another William Gladstone. he was a local pig farmer. He was excellent. He really was. And where was that, Ken?
That was down in Wembley.
In Wembley?
Yes.
And did you enjoy school? Were you?
Oh, I turned up.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Got a lot of my attitude to the radio show. You know?
So your attitude to life. I'm here, therefore
what else
I
can
am.
You ask? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because the thing about school is, we were talking about this on the show last week. You get taught a lot of things at school.
Yeah.
Not many of them are very useful for the rest of your life.
Do you remember the last time you applied Pythagoras' theorem, Ken?
No, that's true.
No?
Yes, I think of like Latin. When would you ever use Latin?
Well, that had gone by the time we got to school, right. Yeah. But no, I don't know. Sic transit gloria?
No, just can't see how you can use it.
There we go. Do you know any Latin?
Amor vincit omnia.
Right, that could be anything, couldn't it?
True.
Says the man who studied Latin.
Could be anything because I can't remember it. So say what you want. What does that mean?
Love conquers all.
Oh, right, okay. Sic transit gloria. That's just, remember, is glory fades.
Okay, there you go.
But that's it's an album by Brand New.
That's a lot of these things that you would learn. Like, for instance, as you well know, the only reason that I've ever had to apply the number pi to anything, it was trying to work out when I'd had a hot dog stuffed crust pizza, how long the sausage would be in the crust of the pizza. that's the only application of maths I think I've used in my adult life.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, I didn't think when I was doing my maths lessons at GCSE that would be the thing that I'd end up using it for.
No, although to be fair, when I was doing my maths lessons at GCSE, I didn't think I'd be using it for anything. It wasn't really my forte. I found one of my old school reports the other day. I say found. I was looking through stuff. It wasn't just there. Oh, look. There's a definite split between my subjects. The English, art, graphic design, that kind of thing, bit of creativity, bit of words, this kind of thing. Oh, Ross is a very capable pupil. Blah, 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 blah. Everything else, Ross is incredibly distracted in lessons and would do well to apply himself or he will fail miserably. That's pretty much it.
I know. I remember one of mine. I said to my missus that I've got this one. This teacher said something about me in my school report. You never believe. And she goes, what is it? She goes, Ken Peterson is a lovely lad, but he'll amount to nothing.
And he was spot on, Ken.
I know.
Well, there we
couldn't have been better, could it?
He's a lovely lad, but will amount to nothing.
Yep. Do you remember what that was for? Which subject?
No, that was the headmaster's...
That was the overriding
statement.
That was the overriding statement at school.
That's what they gave you in a frame as you left.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's what they'll chisel on your gravestone. Yep. He was a lovely lad, but he amounted to nothing. Well, there's an aspiration for you.
Yeah, so I had a big bar to aim at.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least that's kind of the thing of, you know, don't expect anything and you won't be disappointed.
That's it, everything's a bonus.
Did you see him after? Have you ever seen your headmaster since?
I wish I did.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I wish I did.
He said, look, I can make pastry.
I can do multitask now.
There you
do
go.
Few things.
Who knew?
Yeah.
Who knew? What were you expected to do after school?
Well,
go home.
Stay alive would be a bonus, I think.
What in do you the mean? Mean streets of Chesterfield.
When you say what was I expected to do?
Yeah, what was the overriding impression of you as a student? Because again, this goes back to the whole thing. There's certain people at school that tick all the boxes, and you'll go far. But down a certain path, Ken.
I mean, some of the kids I remember they're saying that you'll go to Oxford. You'll go to Cambridge. Looked at me and said, well, you won't go far, son. Clearly, there wasn't a great expectation for me. But
to be fair, you've been to Oxford on the way to Newbury, and you've been to Cambridge on the way to Newmarket.
I've been there. I've ticked those boxes.
This is the Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
I was in the office on Wednesday, and the horse racing was on the TV. And somebody won. I don't know if it was at York or not. Yeah. Somebody won on 50-1 odds.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm
judging from the reaction in the room, that's quite unusual.
Given the high profile of the race, it was very unusual.
It's still unusual anyway. 50-1
Now, is there anything that would have given that away before, do you think, in terms of the... Or is this just one of those fluke things where, just out of nowhere...
I think the race it actually ran in has a history of throwing up very strange results.
Right. Is this what you were saying about York, though?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that race has a history of throwing up very strange results. Looking at it now, the favourite did not perform up to his best for one reason or another, which there was no indication beforehand.
I mean, one of the reasons why that horse was 50-1 is because the favourite, Golden Horn, who finished second, was such a short price that obviously... Yeah, he was a short price, so he was taking a vast majority of the market out, which meant that most of the other runners had inflated odds.
Yes.
Based on their ability.
Okay.
Because he was deemed to be so superior to the rest.
Because he'd not been beaten in his life.
Yeah. For example, if you had a sprint with Usain Bolt in it.
It was a first-time thing that this guy had got beaten, basically.
This guy. Yeah. This guy.
This horse. Sorry.
No, I quite like that. This guy. This guy's got beat. it's like a sprint with Usain Bolt. And if Usain Bolt's in the thing, everyone else, no matter how good they are...
Except me.
It's obviously you, Ken.
Because I'd beat him.
You would, I do feel that's a bit of a... You've wasted your talent there, Ken.
Well, I wanted to keep it hidden.
You like to have a few tricks up your sleeves.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
It was all about the pastry in your youth, wasn't it, Ken? No. Too much pastry.
Exactly. It's all gone to my head.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my gut.
Yeah.
But what I noticed on this... what I noticed on this race was afterwards that... I don't know if they always do this, but he sort of went back down the track again, this guy.
This guy?
And all of the spectators just looked really annoyed.
Yeah.
But he was like amazingly chuffed with himself.
I don't think it was annoying. I think they were just shocked.
Yeah.
I think everyone just couldn't believe what I'd just seen, including myself.
Well, this is the thing about not just racing.
Sport
in general.
That's sport, isn't it?
But I think
people like an underdog.
The unknown can happen in any sport.
That's a good point with the underdog. That's a funny thing. On the one hand, people do like an underdog. On the other hand, I think in life in general, people they go to things and they want to... If something happens that they don't expect, their brain just goes, I can't possibly quantify that.
Because that's the sort of thing that would pique my interest in a sport, something unusual or something.
Yeah.
And I think when it happened in the office, I was like, oh, what's going on here?
But the problem is that if people, what happens a lot of the time is if, as a human being, if you can't explain something, you just get baffled by it. You just, instead of being like, oh, that's interesting, you're like, how did that happen?
Fair enough.
It depends. Certain people will be interested because of it. Other people will be put off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you said that couldn't win. Especially when it was as fair as a pig.
Especially when you put money on it. Thank you, Ross. That one will live with me for a very long time.
Yes. See, this is the joy. This is the joy of being a paddock judge. Ken, obviously.
No, it's the joy of opening your mouth and saying things you shouldn't be saying. That's what it was down to.
That's now. There's a lesson they should teach you at school.
Exactly.
What? When to keep your mouth shut?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I had a problem doing, as you can probably guess.
I think the sentence would be on a hiding to nothing. You're in a lose-lose situation. Sometimes you ain't going to gain anything, so just don't say it.
That's true.
I suppose that's the old saying of if you haven't got anything nice to say,
don't say anything.
Exactly. Is that what they told you at school, Ken?
Yes.
Ken Pennison's in the studio, and Ken, if you haven't got anything nice to say, shut up.
And then goes the wardrobe past your ear.
Exactly. Tougher times.
Back in the 20s. Oh, yeah, definitely.
You're listening to the Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
We were talking about things you should have learned at school. As I said, I'm trying to work out what I did learn at school that has benefited me to this point. I can't think of a single thing. But there was something in the news the other day about there's a debate about people, should you have driving lessons at school, for example. That's another thing. It's like you get to 17, you have to pay hundreds and hundreds of pounds. You essentially have to, off your own back, have to spend a vast amount of money to learn how to drive a big petrol-filled death machine. I get the feeling that everyone should kind of be taught that.
What, how to drive a petrol-filled death machine?
Petrol-filled death machine. Yeah. Admittedly, if they'd call it that, it wouldn't have marketed very well.
Not really.
That's another one. That's instead of laser eye surgery.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
We were talking about this the other day as well, Ken. Laser eye surgery. They could have come up with a better name for it, surely.
Yeah, not really advertising, is it? You think, oof.
Optical correction, that would have done.
Yeah, that
fucking... But laser eye surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing with that, calling it laser eye surgery, I remember a bit when, you know, being a kid and having a laser pen and being told, don't shine this near anyone's eyes because you'll blind them with it. Whereas they've got a machine that's 100 times the size and it's 3 inches from your retina.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And we'll just burn it off. Fine, you'll be fine afterwards. It's fine, don't worry about it.
But I don't have to wear glasses, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
For 5 years and then you'll have to have it done again.
Yeah, you won't have to wear glasses because you've been screaming agony. That'll be it, yeah. But yeah, as I said, so should you be taught to drive?
I don't know about that. Being taught to drive at school.
No.
No?
No, I don't think so.
All right,
so.
Well, that's that one off. Scratch that one off. Other things.
I think... One thing's important. I think kids should be able to go to the dentist and sit in the dentist chair just to get the feeling to know what's going to happen when you become older and you don't look after your teeth. It's what will happen to you.
Is this a personal thing here, Ken?
No, I was all right. Well, sort of. But that'd be a good idea.
See, sort of. There's almost a story there.
Well, yeah.
Do you mean because of the fact
that... Hang on. There's a dentist story. What's the dentist story, Ken?
No, it's not a dentist story. But if you think about it, like, I know... Well...
Come on, Ken. You're amongst friends here.
A friend of mine who's absolutely terrified of the dentist. I mean, just mention it and she's like, goes into a cold sweat. So I thought,
is she all gums? Oh, really?
Well, she might be. She carries on not looking after her teeth. But I think what's important, she was like a young kid. You get in the dentist chair. This is what a dentist does to you. Just give her that self-confidence. I think that could be something that could be a line school could think about.
I think there are certain things that would just a little bit of exposure to it at a younger age would make you much more comfortable.
Yeah.
Such as alcohol.
Exactly. Well, that's true. No, you're good there. You could be right.
Not actually
look
the drinking,
but look at France. You see, you have a little bit of drink when you're young. Don't have an alcohol problem.
Yeah, that is a good point.
The French are very much like their opinion is that the British drink far too much.
That's it.
But that's the same thing with the driving thing. You almost get nothing, and then suddenly you're like, bang, you can drink. Now, from this one day, you're suddenly... And this is the whole crucial thing, is that most of your life, you go through life through ignorant bliss, and then one day someone turns around and goes, everything's changed now. And you go, what do you mean? It's like, you finish university, get a job. How do I get a job? And you're like, no one's taught me.
Yeah.
The same thing with alcohol. You can have a drink now. All right, how should I do it? Do what you want.
Yeah, you can vote now, you're 16. Yeah.
Yeah. Who should I vote for? Oh, huh?
Well, exactly. I've got no idea because it's as if you just expected to know these things out of thin air rather than...
Like politics, it's like what... How do you...
Life skills.
Well, you pick them up from your parents, essentially, or the opposite of rebelling against them.
Yeah, the more they push it, the more you go the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the thing. It's not always necessarily having your parent leaving those things for your parents to teach you. It's not always a great idea, is it?
No.
Because you might rebel exactly against it.
There's a lot of things that, you know, that shouldn't be taught at home. Sex education. It's always a good one. There's a lot of stuff that they should be taught properly in schools, but isn't. You just don't know. That's another thing. You go into the world.
It's good to do everything for you, Ross. You've got to learn. You've got to learn by your mistakes.
No, but we waste so much time learning things that you don't need, Ken.
Go on, give us something. Go on.
What that we don't need? Yeah. That we're taught at school.
Yeah. Trigonometry.
I can make a killer spatula, but you know what? I can also go to the shop and buy a spatula. I tell you what, I could make incredible things out of wood.
Yeah.
I made some fantastic key rings by whittling some plastic. Oh, how I love to whittle. Fantastic. Can't make a career out of whittling though, Kem. Very difficult.
Someone must have made a career out of whittling.
Yeah, that's well, me nan. Oh, I'm always whittling. She was always whittling. that's pretty much it. Yeah, but this just.
I think things like politics that I'd never taken the time to be interested in, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's a general election coming up.
Yeah.
Who are you voting for?
Yeah.
I'm like, what do you mean? Well, you have to pick someone who's going to run the country for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And whatever decisions they make will filter down to you and affect your and people's lives around you.
Although, admittedly...
Now pick well. All right, well, what's the difference? Well, this one's blue, this one's red, this one's yellow. These people like freedom. These want to take it away. But you'll might be better off money wise with
live?
These. Or I don't know. But do you know what I mean? Like if you don't know anything about it,
yeah.
It's like, well, why are they good and they bad? Well, they might be, but then yeah, but they don't think that.
No, but and the problem is the vast majority of the people who are voting don't get anything. It doesn't affect them. You as a straight white, able bodied, relatively middle class male,
it doesn't matter really.
It doesn't matter.
No,
don't matter. Doesn't make any difference to you whatsoever, really, does it?
No,
but
I know.
You get a say. You get a say, Josh.
What I'm saying is,
who gave you an opinion?
It's quite an important thing that I can have an effect on.
Yeah.
So therefore, I ought to know a little bit about what I'm doing.
Yeah.
With it,
that's true.
Nothing.
Yeah.
With a little bit of power, comes a tiny bit of responsibility.
Yeah. You get more responsibility than you should do, really. Yeah. Just in general, I think.
I just sometimes feel like, I don't know if I should be allowed to vote. I don't know what I'm doing.
No.
Well, some people shouldn't be.
Well,
So I'm sorry, you have deplorable ideas about the human race. You should be asked to leave immediately.
The Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
Yeah, I did go to Glastonbury. The only time I've ever been to Glastonbury, though, was...
Why did you go?
Well, I wouldn't usually... The other thing that might put people off Glastonbury is the ticket price.
It's a commitment.
It's expensive.
And you've also got to pay for it, like, what is it, 9 years in advance, is it?
Something like that, and it's very difficult to get tickets. But I went 1 year with some friends from Leeds because they went with a charity, Litter Picking.
Right. Was that the charity? Is that the name of the charity?
Litter Picking. Yeah. Keep the streets clean and the litter picking.
And the
a charity for you. Anyway, so... I can't. You know what? It's bad. The thing is, I don't think I actually.
What's bad?
That I don't remember what the charity was.
You couldn't give a monkeys.
No, I don't think.
You're a horrific human being.
I know, but I just, you know, it's a free ticket.
Exactly.
Thought,
yeah.
It'll be fine.
If the charity involved, what we do is we get cats and we put them into
them
a wheat
in a
thresher.
we use cats to see if a room is big enough.
Yeah.
By swinging them round in, and if it's not, then we have to.
You'd be like, yeah, I'm going for that, yeah. Did you even listen to what we said? No.
A free ticket, that's
free
all
ticket.
I could hear. Free ticket.
We'll give you a free ticket if you murder nine people.
Free
I'm in!
Ticket. Well, the strenuous labour that then ensued was not far off having to murder nine people. In as far as we were litter picking,
right.
The pyramid stage.
Right.
Which is the main stage at Glastonbury, I'm sure you all know.
Yeah.
So we had
is it a pyramid?
It's pyramid, yeah.
Yeah. Is that why they call it the pyramid stage?
You are on fire, Briley.
Oh, baby.
No, really, you're on fire. You've left a lighter going in your
I'm
pocket.
I'm terribly sorry.
So,
appear to be on fire.
A team of about 30 of us
right.
would walk in a line from the back of the field to the front of the field, like sweep, litter picking. You know, like the police might do if someone has gone missing. We did that, but litter picking.
Or like you were going over like it was a medieval battle.
Yes, exactly. And... It may as well have been a medieval battle.
How long would you last in a medieval battle?
Not like 2 minutes. I mean, when you see the first person die in battle, when they've collapsed, clash, that was a combination of collapse and clash.
Yeah. I like to think you'd...
I'd be out then. That would be me. I'd be the one with, like, something, an arrow would go through my eye or...
There's two things. I think you'd either impale yourself on your own sword or someone or someone would use you as a shield. They'd just pick you up and you'd be like, what are you doing? Just use you as a fleshy shield.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had it coming to me. Really, I shouldn't have been in a medieval battle in the first place.
No, that's true. No,
but it did. Okay, so it didn't necessarily feel like a medieval battle, but this was a very muddy field because it's the main thing.
Yeah,
and it was filthy. There's all sorts of litter everywhere. And bear in mind, we're getting up at 5 in the morning to go and do this.
Sounds horrific. I'd rather pay for the ticket.
Yeah, I didn't realise this before I went, because it meant that actually I didn't want to drink for the whole festival, and I didn't really want to stay up late to see any of the bands, because I was so shattered from having to get up at 5 in the morning and litter pick for 2 hours. For 2 hours. Somebody, Ross, some vile human being.
It wasn't me.
I had to litter pick this up. They'd done a number two in a bottle.
Is that by the police?
The diameter of the number two in the bottle. It was a message in a bottle. And the message was, get lost, Sadler. Pick up my bottle of
The message
milk.
Was, you've made a terrible mistake.
Yeah, that was the message in a bottle. But the diameter of the number two was wider than the neck of the bottle. As if they'd managed to sneak in, and then like it was a ship in a bottle. Like
basically, what you found is one of those people who make ships in bottles.
A fecal version of a ship in a bottle.
It one letter away.
And I looked at that, and at 7:30 in the morning at the Pyramid Stage at Glastonbury, I realised I'd made a huge mistake.
I made a huge mistake.
I mean, the other thing was, there was money on the floor, lots of money, like pound coins. And I wouldn't pick them up. That's how filthy the field was.
Oh.
I've got
morals.
No qualms about that sort of thing, or morals. Anyway, so the other sorts of things that we would get is, because we were getting up so early, we would come back at about, it'd be about 7:30, something like that. And people who were still up from the night before would be wandering back to their tents at the same time.
Wondering.
So.
Pondering
back to the tents. So one morning, I'm walking back to the tent, and there's a guy walking towards me, and I'm thinking, is he in a full chainmail armour?
Or have I just been up for too long?
And he was in full chainmail, walking down a hill.
This is the medieval battle, mate, you've got confused.
No, this is Glastonbury. This is definitely Glastonbury. Walking down a hill with his eyes shut, going, Dave, where are you? Where are you, Dave? Dave, like for 2 minutes. I just stood and watched him walk down this hill with his eyes closed doing that.
He'd been doing it all night.
He'd been doing it all night long. And it's what the kids do now. There's a stage just for that at Glastonbury.
Wow.
So what I would say is, if you're going to go to Glastonbury.
Blackpool.
If you're going to go to the Blackpool Tower, then don't buy tickets for Glastonbury. No, if you're going to go to Glastonbury, pay the tickets. And enjoy it.
And just get leathered.
Yeah. Pay the money and enjoy what you've paid for.
Don't try and be a cheapskate.
It wasn't work.
And do a job you haven't researched for a charity you can't remember.
If you want to find a message in a bottle, then don't.
This is the Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
Ross and Josh on the radio. Ross and Josh on the radio. What do we know on the radio? What not to talk about all day long? Okay, good. No, it's not so good, is it?
It's not good. You were doing so well, and then you just veered off the. Your vehicle went straight off the M1. Then
I'll be honest with you, I didn't think it through, Josh.
No,
I didn't. I should have just bought the ticket and gone on with it. Got on with it.
Exactly.
You're at a festival right now.
Exactly. I am
fantastic.
At a festival.
I haven't been to a festival in ages. I went to Leeds Festival, which is coming up next week.
I've never been to Leeds, but I get the impression that it might be.
I think you've missed it. You're too old now.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, I think it's I'm past the age that I ought to go to.
I mean, if you want to go now and you're 28, I'm not stopping
you. As a 28-year-old, I'm not going to punk gigs anymore, am I? So that's.
No.
Oh, no, hang on. I went to one last night. Yeah.
You did. And it was excellent.
It was.
I went to Leeds Festival. I went to Leeds Festival the year of the riots. That was good.
I thought that was every year.
It was for a couple of years. Yeah. I went for 3 years running, and then the moment I stopped going, they stopped rioting.
Was this the year?
I can't help but feel I had something to do with it.
Was this the year that the Kaiser Chiefs wrote the song "I Predict a Riot"?
No, it was the year they wrote "Ruby, Ruby, Ruby, Ruby."
They missed out, didn't they? No?
They did.
If they'd have just gone riot, 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 riot.
They were always a year behind the Kaiser Chiefs. That's the thing. So. It was good. It's a real sight when you look up onto the hill and you see a block of toilets on fire.
Mm.
And it was quite an experience as well, because we were camped near. There was a part of the campsite which you essentially walked. The campsite was on a bit of a slope, and you walk down to the bottom, and there's a little stream and a bridge over the stream. And then there was like a metal gateway that obviously led to a private part of the festival or whatever. So you'd walk down, you'd go over the bridge, and then you'd walk down a little path. It was quite nice, actually, because everyone had to... You had to basically, to get back to our campsite, everyone had to walk up and down this path. So it's quite a nice little... You'd see people on the way, be like, all right, yeah. Mate, how you doing? Oh, have you been to see so-and-so? Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I'm just going back to change my trousers because I've soiled myself. That kind of thing. You'd really connect.
You could have done with a bottle in that situation.
I could have done with a bottle. Bottle of soiled yourselves. It was a nice little thing. However, when the riots kicked in, that became essentially, literally, a bottleneck for people just running around, just terrified, basically. And then what I didn't realise is the metal gates next to the thing opened, and out came the riot police. That's where they'd been hiding for the entire thing. So basically, you had people trying to cross a bridge, a person walking down the bridge, and then this metal gate opened next to them. Riot police came out. This took one girl just walking down and going, oh, no, and just turning back round, and then pelting it off. The riot police did actually knock her to the ground, which at the time was a very harrowing scene. It wasn't particularly fun this year at Leeds Festival. I think this is why I haven't been to a festival in a long time.
If you've always wanted to combine a music festival with a terrorist attack, then Leeds Festival in 2007
yeah,
is for you.
Say, yeah, go back in time and enjoy the past. Yeah, it was fun. The highlight of that though was. There was two things. One person, while they were running down the path, one of the metal poles that was holding the lights up had fallen over. But he didn't see that, and he was running full pelt down a hill, tripped over the pole, and if it was an Olympic year, he would have definitely won the long jump. Except he landed face first in the ground. But of course, everyone was really like, "Oh, I'm sorry, mate. Are you all right?" But they weren't. They were doing it through tears of laughter. as he was knocked out on the floor, because it's one of the greatest things I've ever seen, and I will never forget it. And then what also happened was about 30 yards away from there was a lovely couple who'd clearly met during the festival and were having a very nice time.
Wow!
But they'd forgotten to take the clothes off and were just rubbing each other, just rubbing up against each other, completely oblivious to the fact that there was a riot going on.
No idea.
For 20 minutes. Just, that's how long I sat and watched them.
Just dry humpy bumping and no oblivious to the riots.
No idea.
Wow. They
Absolutely
must have been sober.
No, I think they were definitely sober, yeah. Without a shadow of a doubt. That's my overriding memory of festivals.
I mean, I suppose the thing is with a festival,
it's what you make of it.
But it's something crazy is going to happen. Why wouldn't there be?
Well, listen,
you're putting people in a field and saying, drink as much alcohol as you want.
You're removing people from civilization almost.
Yeah, exactly. That's what a festival is, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And you're going, deal with this. You know, everything goes literally down the pan. It's quite an experience, isn't it, really? This is what happened is, you know when people say, what would it be like if there was no rules or laws in the world? And I think we'd still be all right. I think we'd still all... socially, we'd be fine.
If anarchy was the political system that we had, is that what you're saying? That the whole country would be a music festival?
Would be a big, massive music festival.
I think... You know when people leave school and they go to Thailand to find themselves?
Yeah.
I don't think they should do it. They should go to a music festival to find themselves. Because they're allowed to be whatever they want to be and do it. No, almost no rules. And there, amongst the rulelessness,
lawless.
You shall find oneself.
Yeah. Have you found yourself?
No, I'm too small.
You're far too small. Yeah. You can hide in literally any nook or cranny, can't you?
I think me finding myself would be a bit of a disappointing experience. Like,
oh, is that?
Oh, there I am.
Is that me?
I am. That's all. That's what I thought I was.
Is that I am?
Yeah.
I am. Oh, that would be quite disappointing, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, maybe one day when I find myself, I'll let you know where I was. Probably in the last place that I'd looked.
It's always
in the last place that you look, isn't it?
The thing is, it's usually down the back of the sofa, and there's a massive chance that you could actually be there.
That's true. I do like a sleep on the sofa.
You do.
I treat myself every now and then.
Yeah, but why not?
Why not?
You're listening to the Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
I went for my haircut earlier.
Did you?
I did. Can you tell?
No. I'm not even lying, I can't. This is the thing.
Seriously?
I'm serious, sorry. It's just one of those things that, well, maybe you've got headphones on now, so it might be difficult to tell. Let's have a look. Oh, yeah, I can tell. When you've got the headphones on, it kind of masks the sides
of it. Have you had your hair cut? What? Hang on, are you suggesting that my hair normally looks like I'm wearing headphones? Oh, it looks normal, mate.
No. What I'm saying is you're the sort of person that has the self-respect and dignity to go and get their haircut on a regular basis,
yes.
Right? So the difference between haircuts is not vast. Whereas I will wait. I'm like a sheep. I will wait till the summer before I'm shorn, and then
the
maybe
summer of
Fred
shorn.
Or Steve, and then I will have my hair cut really short and let it grow for an entire year again. So people really notice when I have my hair cut.
Yeah.
Because I'm terrified of going to the hairdressers. But you had your hair cut today, and your hairdresser.
Yeah, Joe. I went there to begin with. I go back. I mean, he's a more than capable hairdresser.
Yeah.
But he's also my friend.
Well, that's good.
And that's the main reason. I thought about going somewhere else the other day just to mix it up a bit, but then I thought, I don't want to hurt Joe's feelings. I actually went in today and he was running late because the guy who was in before me basically went in and he said, what do you want? He said, can I have a zero back and sides?
Yeah.
And he said, right, so zero blended in and a bit. He said, don't even blend it in this time. Just do it. He said, you want a zero all the way up to the top? He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So he did the zero all the way up to the top. And it got to the end and he was like, I don't like that, mate. And Joe was like, it's a zero. What do you want me to do about it?
What he
was
did
like,
he
well,
expect?
He was like, well, it doesn't look very blended in. You told me not to blend it in. He said, well, can you do something about it? So we basically had to spend the next 15 minutes trying to kind of fashion some sort of better haircut out of this. And I was like...
Out of hair that isn't there anymore.
Exactly. If you think you might go for a zero, go for a one. And then you've got a bit of leeway. Got a bit of leeway. Blend it in and then you can unblend it. Joe was
livid.
Well, he wasn't livid, no. He was just a bit distraught because he was like, I feel like it's my mistake. I should have said no.
He should have put his foot down and gone, it's going to look rubbish.
It's going to look ridiculous. You're an idiot.
I suppose it's an occupational hazard with hairdressing, though, isn't it?
Well, this is the thing, right? Normally, what people do is they go in and they get a haircut and they go, this isn't what I asked for. That guy went in, got exactly what he asked for.
And he didn't like it.
And he didn't like it. So the next time you're in a hairdresser's and they don't do what you asked for, just think about that. You could be that guy. But he was just genuinely like, oh, I don't know what to do about this. How can you... There's nothing there.
You can't make it out of nothing, can you? There's literally no there hair to do it with.
But you bumped into Joe the other day as well, didn't you?
Well, look, I mean, the thing is, we've seen Joe. You bumped into him when I was with you at the pub, and we ended up having a drink or two with him and his significant other. Now, I wasn't even sure that he was called Joe, but I saw him in Lidl and I recognised him. We'd had a very brief encounter before, and then I think we probably would recognise each other. So over the meat freezers in Lidl,
wow,
other supermarkets are available.
Romantic.
It's so romantic. I was looking at the chops. I don't know what he was looking at.
Chicken, he told me. Looking at the chicken.
Was he? Yeah. So he did see me then. He did see me because I looked up over the thing and looked him right in the eyes, right? And he immediately put his gaze back down into the freezer chest. And I was like, he's seen me. He has recognised me. But he's forgotten my name, or he's in a rush and he just doesn't want to talk, or he thinks it'll be awkward. So I
feel I'm in a unique position. Often when you have these socially awkward positions, you don't get the other side.
The other side.
But I've seen both sides.
So what I did, well, I'll tell you my side then, and then you can tell me, because I still don't know what Joe had said. I thought, well, I'll oblige. I'll walk to the vegetables. I'll get out of his way. I'll leave him to do his shopping and not have the social awkwardness or whatever. So I get to the vegetables, and then... And then he's there again. And I thought, well, maybe he didn't see me then. Maybe he didn't see me. So I look at him, and he looks at me, and for some reason, I then drop my gaze back to the vegetables.
He'd been socially conditioned.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I'm like, oh, no, now he thinks that he's seen me, and I don't want to talk to him because of the socially awkward thing. So what's going to happen now? So then he did what I did, I think, and he walked off to another bit of the... And then after that, I was like, right, okay, it's fine. He's going to pay now. I can keep looking at the vegetables. He'd obviously gone to pay, forgot something, and come back, and then was stood next to me again at the lemons. I was looking at the lemons. He wanted the lemon or whatever it was. I can't really remember. And at that point, I thought, I've got to say something. But I didn't. And it was just like, well, it's too far in now.
It's too far in.
It's too far in. So I just hid by the spinach of which is in the corner of Lidl.
It's a very healthy place.
And I sort of stared into the corner for 5 minutes and kept checking to see if he'd gone. And then when he'd gone, I then did the rest of my shopping.
You're an idiot.
I know I'm an idiot. So what did Joe say?
Well, he basically said, well, I saw him and I thought, I recognise that guy's face. I don't know if he's a client. I can't be asked to have a conversation with him. So I'm just going to pretend he's not there.
Well, there we go then. So that's what he did do then.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm glad that I had... gauged that correctly.
Yeah, you had, yeah.
Because if I hadn't, and he was like, well, I was going to talk to you, but you just ignored me.
But you are both idiots.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. You know what? I socially assured idiots together. I'm fine with that.
The Ross and Josh Show on Radio Yorkshire.
That's been The Ross and Josh Show.
It has. I've enjoyed it a lot. I've learned a lot of things.
I've learned many things. Do not put your hand in the toaster.
Yeah, there's that. You know, if you need to go and you've got a bottle, it's possible.
That's a very inspirational message.
Yeah.
Very inspirational.
Well, that's what I like to do with my woeful and dirty tales, is actually bring...
Josh Adler's Woeful Dirty Tales sounds quite good, actually.
Yeah.
Sounds quite good. It could be a mixtape. And if you're at a festival, enjoy yourself as well.
Thank you, I will.
Good. And whatever else you're doing as well, just enjoy yourself.
Just have a nice time.
Stick around, listen to Radio Yorkshire, see what's going to go on.
You never know. You never know what's going to happen.
It's a wonderful county out there.
It is.
There's a lot going on. I've been Ross.
I've been Josh.
You've been Josh. And Ken was Ken.
He was.
He was, until he wasn't. It's been Radio Yorkshire. Well, it still is Radio Yorkshire. We're not going to end it.
And, yeah, he is a thoroughly nice chap.
Yeah.
And I would like to think that we are as well. But it's a shame that we will never go anywhere.
You just won't amount to anything, mate.
No.
But that's all right.